Well, today's date is March 31st, 2024 of the Common Era. And the time is 17:28 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again. And after so many years, there's a picture adjacent to paragraph 9-11 in the Crucible article. A photo of the author as a young man. That's yours truly right there. Author Ward Green, at the age of about 19 years old, according to the caption there. It was when I lived in Deep River with my parents at that time. I'm not sure how I know when that was taken, but if I was 19, then it would have been after I went to university and came back again. And that looks appropriate to the posture that I have there. In the picture where I'm standing with my hand in my pocket, a casual posture, wearing glasses, as I still do today, and with hair that's not cut particularly short at that time. Today's study in the Crucible article, this is the article that we've been studying, the C-cubed article, and it's very, very, very detailed what we're going to be reading about. And I was looking at it again today, and when we remember that there's a similar lunar alignment every 11 years and every 14 years, and every combination of 11 plus 14, which is 25 years, there's another similar lunar alignment. So we are either close to the correct chronology, or we're 11 years wrong, or 14 years wrong, or 25 years wrong. So when we see and believe that we are close to the correct chronology, then we know we're pretty exact when we have a lunar alignment that fits. And not every lunar alignment, I mean, we have so many lunar alignments and everything has to fit together. Because we've got an alignment in the time of Osorkon the Elder from the Trojan War article. That was it there. Yeah. And by the way, remember the Moses article we talked about. And we found out that I was looking at the wrong table yesterday. I should have been looking at the table H5A, and I was looking at H5B. And H5B was the conventional chronology, where they had doctored and altered the years of the kings in the books of the Bible. They had altered the reigns of the kings. They actually, you know, what's the word, adulterated the Bible, but they desecrated the Bible. And when they did that, they actually shortened the average generation by an unacceptable amount, which we saw was 22 years, but some 4 years shorter than it should have been, or even 6 years too short, possibly. But it was perfectly fine using the numbers in the Bible as the previous table, which I presented there, had shown. I did it that way on purpose so that you would easily be viewing either table and see what you thought about it. Having them look very similar, that's the way I did it. But it turned out that only the Bible numbers work to create the correct average generation, or something that you would expect, knowing what we know about humanity and how long a generation for a firstborn son is. In another all-time first in history, we get the privilege of studying the pharaohs of Egypt in their place opposite the kings of Israel, uncovering long hidden relationships. Please remember, dear reader, that we have our obligations to fulfill first with regard to the purifying of the facts in the crucible of what Jehovah gave us as a true chronology. There's the picture of the author, slightly magnified. Let's see if we can blow it up even more. There. Okay. Should have done it this way. Okay. I can't get the face centered without... Okay, there we go. Without the cursor interfering. Who of us would not have been thrilled to have known which other kings ruled the world at the time of our King David? I mean, to bring it to life like that, to know what other kings ruled in the world at the time of King David, is it possible that the Bible itself was gravely censored? Does the scripture not tell us in some place that the scroll itself was to be sealed until the time of the end? This is indeed a serious matter, and one that is very much connected with the gravity of our belief. The gravity of our belief, a sacred secret. Is that why we don't know the names of the pharaohs? It's a good question. At least we don't know according to what the Bible says, but we have to work it out for ourselves. There are 20 references to the sacred secret in the Bible. Pharaoh Susen, conventionally dated 1047 to 1001. That's Susen the first. Has been corrected by 17 years by Mr. Gertu. That's Gerard Gertu. Gertu. To 1064 to 1018. Pharaoh Smendes, 1077 to 1052 BCE, conventional, is 1090 to 1064. We have a year 25 for Smendes. And Manetho says 26 years, right? But his reign could have been 25 years, not 26, because we only have 25 as far as the evidence, you know, that we have. However, since we have found that Pharaoh Shoshank I rules at 993 BCE, 13 years higher than Mr. Gertu, so might we believe that Pharaoh Smendes reigns earlier than 1090 BCE? Right. Conventionally, Smendes was 1077 to 1052. But we have raised Smendes to 1115 to 1089, right? That's the end of his reign for us, not the beginning of his reign. But the thing is, another thing I want to point out here is that the kings of... It's very important to understand the pharaohs of Egypt were not dated according to an accession year, so that they didn't finish out their last year after they died. They weren't considered as having continued to reign till the beginning of the next year, which is the accession year system. Their yearly reigns, or their reign lengths, are exact, so many years plus so many months. They as soon as they die, that's the end of the reign. The new king begins to rule at the death of the previous. That's the way the Egyptians reckoned everything. As ably described by Mr. Gertu, the resolution of reigns of the pharaohs immediately preceding Shoshank I is easily resolved with the recognition that the high priest of Ammon at Thebes, Susen III, co-ruled as pharaoh from the 10th year. Oh, yes, right, the high priest of Ammon, high priest of Amun. At Thebes, Susen III co-ruled as pharaoh from the 10th year of Pharaoh Simon, and is named Pharaoh Susen II. That's something that I learned from Mr. Gertu, but it's something confirmed by Mr. Jensen Winkeln agrees that Susen III is quote-unquote probably identical with Pharaoh Susen II. Pharaoh Susen III is probably identical with Pharaoh Susen II, whose reign was real, the reign of Susen II. The number the third was just an arbitrary number given to him when he was high priest, because there were other people named Susen, evidently. And that's what happened with the numbering. But Simon Sinachis is given 9, and Susen 14 years by Julius Africanus. That's on the Manethan lists, right, that we have. Where did I put those? I don't know where they are now. We looked at the example yesterday about the reigns of the Israelite kings, right? In the article Moses. Here it is. We're depending on the internet to load it for us. Here we go. There it is. So this is Fotheringham's book, which gives us the reigns of the kings of Dynasty 21, where we have Susen and Susen II. And it's right there. I'm trying to find out. Okay, now where were we? Here. Or is it here? No, it's here. Okay. Right. Yeah, that's right. The 14 years I wanted to show you. 14 years for Susen was from Julian Africanus. Right there. Susen, 14 years. So, let's just make it a bit smaller so we can see it. There it is. Yeah. So, and Simon, or Sinachis, was given 9 years by both Africanus and also Eusebius. But when we use all the information, we arrive at a certain necessity of doing it a certain way. Way over here. There we are. And also, Mr. Gertu notes that a year 17 for Pharaoh Simon and a year 11 for Pharaoh Susen are attested, to whom he allows 19 and 14 years respectively. Once again, the provision of Yahweh, the true God, is in the form of the lunar dating, according lunar dates, according to a priestly induction. The first month of Shemu, not the first day, but the first month of Shemu, the 13th day of that month, believed to be a new moon from year 11 of Susen II, which date is January 7th in the years of 1000 through 997 BCE, comparing the Egyptian calendar to the Julian calendar. It's always January 7th throughout those 4 years. Here is, as gift or providence, a new moon, January 7th, 998. We're going to have to show you some of this. I want you to see it, but 998. Okay, so let's go 998. 998, here it is. January 7th. We've got to go back. See if there's a new moon here. Bang, new moon. Right, about 10 in the morning, Egyptian time, January 7th, 998 BCE, there's actually a new moon. And that is worth noting. We'd have to add 11 years to that, roughly, to get back to year 1, which would be about 1008, right? For year 1 of Susen II, which is good, but because it means that 1008, 8 years to get to down to 1000, and then another 7 to get to 993, is 15 years nominally, but it could be 14 years and some months. So that fits with the 14 years given here for Susen by Manetho in the version of Julius Africanus. So it's remarkable how well it works. It's remarkable. Now, with a priestly induction believed to occur on a lunar day 1 to 5, this date, 998 BCE, is suitable as an exact day 1. Lunar day 1, right? We saw that. I mean, look at the... Here it is here. It says 10:22:50 is the local time of the new moon. That's a new moon. Lunar day 1. New moon. 998 BCE, January 7th. Okay, so that's the method we use to do all these calculations. So I think we've done enough for today in this article, because if we try and do more, it gets very confusing all the time. But, you know, we need to study it bit by bit and continue working on it all the time. Oh, yes. Okay. Well, you know what I haven't done? I haven't reviewed yet what our daily scripture is for today. I haven't even found it where it is yet. Let's see. It's probably nearby here. There it is. Okay. Great. It's right next to the Manetho by Fotheringham. So we were doing 17 and 18 yesterday about the one quick to anger. So little children, this is today's proverb. It's from Proverbs 14 and 19. And also, we could do verse 20 if we think we should, but I'm not sure if we should or not. To good ones, the evil ones bow in the dust, and wicked ones kneel at the gates of the just. The poor man is hated by even a friend, but riches will many a man honor lend. Fascinating. That's the proverb for today, little children. Proverbs 14, verses 19 and 20. In the Ward Green version from 2006. Different years for different parts of the commentary or the translation, which is a poetic commentary. Second Chronicles 22 is short. We can perhaps read that. Maybe we'll come back to the Egyptian thing, if, you know, to the Egyptian chronology at the end if we have time. So let's try and get our reading done and understand what the Bible says in 2 Chronicles 22. So Jehoram died, and then the son of Jehoram, it says here, the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah his youngest son, 2 Chronicles 22 and 1. They made Jehoram's youngest son king in place of him, for the marauder band that came with the Arabs to the camp had killed all the older ones. And Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, began to reign as king of Judah. 22 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and for 1 year he reigned in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Athaliah, the granddaughter of Omri. She was the mother of Ahaziah, but she had married Jehoram. She was from the wicked kingdom of the north. Now Ahaziah himself also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother herself became his counselor in doing wickedly, and he went on doing what was bad in Jehovah's eyes, the same as the house of Ahab, for they themselves became counselors to him after the death of his father, to his ruination. That was his father Jehoram who died. It was also in their counsel that he walked, so that he went with Jehoram the son of Ahab, the king of Israel, to the war against Hazael, the king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead, at which the shooters got to strike Jehoram. Hence he returned to get healed at Jezreel from the wounds that they had inflicted upon him at Ramah when he fought Hazael, the king of Syria. Ramah being another short form for Ramoth-Gilead, evidently. And we know that this whole story, all of this story, is told in the Book of Kings as well, and in the books of Kings, either 1st or 2nd Kings, contain the same things as is contained in 1st and 2nd Chronicles, except there are some different things as well. As for Azariah, the son of Jehoram, the king of Judah, he went down to see Jehoram the son of Ahab in Jezreel, for he was sick. Jezreel was where the kings of the northern kingdom lived, even though Samaria was their capital city. But it was from God that the downfall of Ahaziah occurred by his coming to Jehoram. And when he came, he went out with Jehoram to Jehu, the grandson of Nimshi, whom Jehovah had anointed to cut off the house of Ahab. And it came about that as soon as Jehu, this was the famous Jehu, who became the king of Israel, as soon as Jehu had entered into controversy with the house of Ahab, He got to find the princes of Judah and the sons of the brothers of Ahaziah, ministers of Ahaziah, and he proceeded to kill them. We know that Jehu cut off the house of Ahab, and he killed... Well, we're not studying that today. Let's see if we can find out more about it. Yeah, I mean, he killed more than just the sons of the princes of Judah here, or the brothers of Ahaziah. But we're not concerned about that today. Then he went looking for Ahaziah, and they finally captured him as he was hiding in Samaria. Let's see. Maybe we should find out what Jehu did. Well, here he is. He's riding now in 2 Kings 9. Yeah, Jehoram was killed. Right. And Ahaziah fled. And they struck him down as well. 2 Kings 9:27, right. And then he went to Jezebel and made sure that she was dead as well. But we're not going to dwell too much on what Jehu did today. Then they put... In verse 9 of 2 Chronicles 20... 2 Chronicles 22, verse 9, Jehu went looking for Ahaziah, and they finally captured him as he was hiding in Samaria and brought him to Jehu. Then they put him to death and buried him, for they said, "He is the grandson of Jehoshaphat, who searched for Jehovah with all his heart." There was no one of the house of Ahaziah to retain power for the kingdom. As regards Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, she saw that her son had died, so she rose up and destroyed all the royal offspring of the house of Judah. All the royal offspring of the house of Judah. However, Jehoshabeath, the daughter of the king, took Jehoash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the sons of the king that were to be put to death, and put him and his nursing woman in the inner room for the couches. And Jehoshabeath, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she herself happened to be the sister of Ahaziah, kept him concealed. She was his, Jehoash's aunt, evidently the aunt of Jehoash. She kept him concealed because of Athaliah, who was the mother of Ahaziah. And so Athaliah was trying to destroy the royal offspring, including Jehoash, but Jehoshabeath prevented it, and he continued. Okay, so Athaliah didn't put Jehoash to death, and he continued with them in the house of the true God, hidden for 6 years. While Athaliah was ruling as queen over the land for 6 years, this young boy, Jehoash, was kept hidden. That's the end of our study for 2 Chronicles 22. It's a fascinating story, and that's why it's important to do it, for us to have done it today, to read that. The pronouncement against Nineveh, the book of the vision of, and also this chronological information, the 6 years, it's chronologically important. Now, Nahum, the prophet Nahum, it's wonderful. It says, Adam Clark says some interesting things about it. He says, "The conduct and imagery of this prophetical poem are truly admirable." And then in his commentary on the book of Nahum, before he begins the commentary on the verses, he continues talking about the different things. And he says, "What one eminent critic called Louth said was, not one of the minor prophets equals the sublimity, genius, and spirit of Nahum. Besides, his prophecy is a perfect poem. The exordium is exceedingly majestic. The apparatus for the destruction of Nineveh and the description of that catastrophe are painted in the most glowing colors and are admirably clear and powerful." Nahum chapter 1. the pronouncement against Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum, the Elkoshite. Jehovah is a God exacting exclusive devotion and taking vengeance. Jehovah is taking vengeance and is disposed to rage. Jehovah is taking vengeance against his adversaries, and he is resentful toward his enemies. Jehovah wants what's best for us. That's why he's jealous of other false gods. He wants what's best for us. Jehovah, verse 3, is slow to anger and great in power, and by no means will Jehovah hold back from punishing. In destructive wind and in storm is his way, and the cloud mass is the powder of his feet. He is rebuking the sea, and he dries it up, and all the rivers he actually makes run dry. Bashan and Carmel have withered. Those are locations, geographical locations. And the very blossom of Lebanon has withered. Mountains themselves have rocked because of him, and the very hills found themselves melting. Reminiscent of 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 13. And the earth will be upheaved because of his face. Is it going to give us that reference? It doesn't even give us that reference. Let's go look at 2 Peter 3 and 13 just for confirmation of what I just said. He's going to say, in these righteousness is to dwell. So it's verse 12 where it says, the elements being intensely hot will melt. And verse 13 says, but there are new heavens and a new earth that we are awaiting according to his promise. And in these righteousness is to dwell. Heavens can be symbolic of government, and earth is symbolic of the society. A righteous society under a righteous government in which righteousness is to dwell. Okay. And verse 5 continuing now in Nahum chapter 1, and the earth will be upheaved because of his face. The productive land also, and all those dwelling in it. And in the face of his denunciation, who can stand, and who can rise up against the heat of his anger? His own rage will certainly be poured out like fire. There's that illustration of fire again. Or heat. And the very rocks will actually be pulled down because of him. Yahweh is good. A stronghold in the day of distress, and he is cognizant of those seeking refuge in him. And by the flood that is passing along, he will make an outright extermination of her place, and darkness will pursue his very enemies. What will you men think up against Jehovah? He is causing an outright extermination. Distress will not rise up a second time, although they are being interwoven even as thorns, and they are drunken as with their wheat beer. They will certainly be devoured like stubble, fully dry. Out of you there will actually go forth one who is thinking up against Yahweh what is bad, counseling what is not worthwhile. This is what Yahweh has said. Although they were in complete form, and there were many in that state, even in that state they must be cut down, and one must pass through. And I shall certainly afflict you so that I shall not afflict you any more. And now I shall break his carrying bar from upon you, and the bands upon you I shall tear in two. And concerning you, Yahweh has commanded, nothing of your name will be sown any more. Out of the house of your gods I shall cut off carved image and molten statue. I shall make a burial place for you, because you have been of no account. Look upon the mountains, the feet of one bringing good news, one publishing peace. O Judah, celebrate your festivals. Pay your vows, because no more will any good-for-nothing person pass again through you. In his entirety, he will certainly be cut off. And the statement by Clark is interesting. He says, and there's some interesting references in the Insight books under Nahum too, under the book of Nahum particularly, in the Insight book. But, yeah, Assyria afflicted Judah, as well as, we know, defeating the northern kingdom of Israel and conquering Samaria and carrying them into captivity, and even before that, Tiglath-Pileser, before the siege of Samaria, which was initiated by Esarhaddon, a king who came after Tiglath-Pileser. But even Tiglath-Pileser had taken exiles from the northern kingdom of Israel, as we've already discussed and read about in the Bible. But the fascinating thing here also that is mentioned here, the evidences that he speaks of in his commentary cause Adam Clark to say the following: all these evidences convince us that Nahum cannot be placed before the 15th year of Hezekiah, since the expedition of Sennacherib against this prince was in the 14th year of his reign. King Hezekiah, we know, experienced the invasion of Sennacherib in his year 14. And these things that were being talked about, he would break the, here it says, I shall break his bar upon, the bands upon you. Verse 13, now I shall break his carrying bar from upon you, and the bands upon you I shall tear in two. The Assyrians tried to put a yoke upon Judah as well as, or as they had, the northern kingdom of Israel. They were trying to bring Judah into subjection as well, and we know eventually, of course, they were just destroyed. Their kingdom was brought to an end by the, at the time when Nebuchadnezzar became dominant, or his, the Babylonian kingdom, his kingdom became dominant shortly before Nebuchadnezzar became king himself. The kingdom of Babylon conquered the Assyrian kingdom. He became dominant over them. And from that point, it's possible to count the 70 years from the destruction of Assyria in 609 to 539, or 608 to 538 BCE, as the 70 years spoken about by Jeremiah when all the nations would be subject to, well, or I should say, we'd have to, well, let's look at it. Let's look at the Jeremiah, the prophecy of Jeremiah. It's in, I don't even know if I can find it that quickly, but 25 or 27, where is it? The fourth year, yeah, right, in the fourth year. Right, here it is, yeah. These nations will have to serve the king of Babylon 70 years. It's Jeremiah 25 and 11. But what does the Septuagint say in Jeremiah 25 and 11? That's the question. Or we'll go to the Oxford version if we have time. We're out of time. Okay. But it's something about, where's Jeremiah? Here he is. What is it again? Jeremiah chapter what? 25 and 11, I think. 25 and 11. Right. They shall be slaves among the nations 70 years. Right, the whole land. The Israelites would be slaves among the nations for 70 years. Is what it said. So, and that applied to their servitude to Egypt also, as vassals of Egypt. That's right. I remember that now. That's all for today's video and study. It's such an exciting thing to be able to understand the ancient history with accurate dates, knowing that it was real. Because we know the dating, it makes it real. It makes it historical. There is no other history like the genealogy. There isn't one. It has nothing to do with the environment, the word green, in this sense of the genealogy. But it's named, it's the family name Green that originated the study of this topic, and that's why it was called the genealogy. But Sunday, this is March 31st, 2024, 02 hours Eastern Daylight Time. That's the conclusion of our video and our study for today. I'm Ward Green. I love you. And once again, this is, in my behalf, Liv Dusty and Cassie saying bye for now.